Welcome, members and guests. The Capital Investment Committee hearing for February 14th, 2024 is called to order. Before we move on to minutes and order of business, I just want to introduce you all to two new members of the committee staff. First, we have Elena, who was on the tours with us, who will be now our permanent CLA, and then Rachel, who will be our new committee page sitting over there. With that, Vice Chair Ryer, can I have a motion to approve the minutes for April 14th, 2023?
Mr. Chair, I move approval of the minutes for April 14th, 2023.
Vice Chair Ryer moves approval of the minutes for April 14th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Vice Chair Ryer, can I have approval of the minutes for May 12th, 2023 for the joint committee hearing?
Mr. Chair, I move approval of the minutes for May 12, 2023.
Vice Chair Ryer, move approval of the minutes for May 12, 2023. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Members, I would like to call your attention to a document in your folders entitled Updated 2324 Capital Investment Committee Rules and Procedures. These are the same committee rules from last session with one addendum to promote respect and inclusiveness for members of the legislature and the public. Committee rule number 15 has been added in the state. Members are expected to use preferred honorifics and pronouns when provided for all representatives and testifiers participating in a hearing. And now with that, we'll turn it over to a commissioner from Minnesota Management Budget to present the governor's 2024 bonding recommendations. Commissioner, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Lee, Vice Chair Ryer, Lead Erdahl, and members of the committee. My name is Erin Campbell, and I'm the commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget. And I'm here today with a few of my colleagues to present the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's infrastructure plan. Today, I will provide an overview of the capital budget process, discuss the growing needs for Minnesota's infrastructure, provide an overview of the Governor's infrastructure plan, and walk through the capital budget financing of this plan. So first we'll talk about the capital budget process. MMB collects information for the capital budget following a statutorily directed process, which is open to state agencies and political subdivisions whose capital projects are generally eligible for general obligation bonds. Requests are developed in odd number calendar years and published in the governor's recommendations in January of even number calendar years. This process is facilitated by MMB. After the capital budget system opened in May, MMB hosted a Q&A session and provided instructions and assistance to agencies and political subdivisions submitting projects. Initial information for projects was published by July. Then, this fall and winter, MMB went on bonding tours, conducted meetings, and reviewed projects. On January 16th, the governor's recommendations and all final requests were published. A few highlights from our site visits. We're visiting a wastewater treatment plant and hearing about the importance of PFA programs for local governments and seeing state asset preservation needs. As you know, there's a growing demand for capital projects this cycle. A total of $7.6 billion in requests have been received from state agencies and political subdivisions for the 2024 capital budget. $4.7 billion is requested from state agencies, and that's a 16% increase from last cycle. And $2.9 billion is requested from local governments, which is more than double the amount requested last cycle. State agencies who own buildings and other infrastructure requested asset preservation and renovation funding. These projects began to address the deferred maintenance backlog in state infrastructure, which for buildings alone has grown 74% since 2015. The current backlog is $6.4 billion combining state agencies and higher education. You can see on the slide the breakdown between those different organizations. The $6.4 billion in deferred maintenance on the previous slide does not include other state-owned infrastructure, such as roads and bridges, water infrastructure, and other physical assets, many of which are maintained by the DNR, DOC, and DHS. For example, on the left, DNR replaced a bridge, and on the right, DNR replaced an aging culvert with asset preservation dollars. When rebuilding, DNR considered stream flow, ecosystem design, and the effects of more intense rain events so that we can use these resources for years to come. It's urgent that we invest in asset preservation this session for a variety of reasons. First, it's cheaper to maintain infrastructure than to fix it when it fails. It costs $14 per square foot to repair buildings in excellent condition versus $159 per square foot in crisis condition. 56% of state building systems are in fair, poor, or crisis condition. Additionally, state of Minnesota buildings have an average age of 42 years. The largest and most expensive of all asset renewal projects tend to occur when a building is over 30 years old. As a result, significant funds are needed to be reinvested in these buildings to preserve what we have. The majority of state-owned buildings are more than 30 years old, so it's critical that we reinvest in them now so they can serve Minnesotans for many years to come. Of note, there are state assets in all 87 counties, so investing in asset preservation touches all corners of our state. Next, I'll be walking through the governor's infrastructure plan on a high level. In upcoming hearings, we expect other state agency leaders will be presenting their projects in greater detail. The headline here is that the governor's infrastructure plan takes care of what the state has already built, which is a fiscally responsible bill. This plan is designed to focus on the most critical needs while keeping in mind the historic bonding bill last session, the largest in state history. A major focus in the governor's plan is investing in asset preservation. Last session, the state didn't receive as high a share of the bill as had been done in the past. Asset preservation was 10% of the 2023 enacted package and was 43% of the governor's plan. Importantly, as I said, we view these recommendations as fiscally responsible. This plan stays within the state's debt capacity guidelines, which are $830 million in general obligation bonds. I'd note that rating agencies view the state's adherence to debt guidelines as a positive factor in the state's overall credit rating. So we pay close attention to that too. The plan is also within the $82 million balance in our forecast after inflation at the end of FY27 and spends only $28 million in general fund cash above the forecast. This plan is also within the $84 million balance in the Trunk Highway Fund. This pie chart shows the main categories of the governor's recommendations. The next slide will provide more details. 45%, almost half, is focused on asset preservation and renovating existing state spaces. 22% of the bill is for water and transportation infrastructure. 14% relates to public safety. 10% is for housing and environment. And 9% is for other priorities, including a variety of grant programs. I'll note that overall, 25% of the governor's recommendations are for grants to non-state entities like local governments. $441 million of the plan is to preserve state infrastructure. $103 million is for the University of Minnesota Heber. $103 million is for Minnesota State, $82 million for Heber, and $21 million for the St. Paul College Project. And $202 million is for state agency asset preservation, including $76 million for the Department of Corrections, which has extensive deferred maintenance need. $22 million is included for other state agency renovation projects, including $13 million for the Department of Human Services to replace water and sewer infrastructure at the St. Peter campus that has exceeded its useful life and would impact clients and staff if it fails. $216 million of the plan is for water and transportation infrastructure. $40 million is included for MnDOT to address state bridges deteriorating into poor conditions across the state. $37 million is included for the Met Council to keep the H-Line bus rapid transit project advancing between downtown Minneapolis and the east side of St. Paul. $109 million is included for the Public Facilities Authority, water infrastructure loans and grants, including $10 million for lead service lines and $18 million for new grants to address drinking contaminants in drinking water for local governments. And $10 million is included for a new pollution control agency grants to address contaminants in drinking water for privately owned wells. We've invested $143 million of the plan in public safety. $75 million is included for the Department of Public Safety investments, including $48 million for a new Bureau of Criminal Apprehension facility in southern Minnesota, providing investigatory and laboratory analysis for criminal investigations in an area of the state with high need. Also included are $4 million for design and land acquisition for an expansion of the BCA's regional office and laboratory in Bemidji, and $22 million for design and land acquisition for a new State Patrol headquarters building. In addition, $47 million is included for the Department of Corrections to expand education and programming space at their Rush City facility. It's a facility that lacks sufficient space for programming to transform the lives for a safer Minnesota. $98 million of the plan is for housing and environment. $50 million is included for housing infrastructure bonds to develop housing across the state, including permanent supportive housing, preservation of federally assisted housing, and deeply affordable new construction. $7.5 million is included to preserve existing public housing and keep it safe and healthy for residents. $16 million is included to update the Minneapolis Veterans Home, Building 16, to better serve its residents in bringing the facility up to code and addressing systems that have periodic failures. $10 million is included for the Water and Soil Resources Board to acquire permanent easements in ecologically sensitive areas, improving water quality by reducing nitrogen, phosphorus, and sediment from entering streams and rivers. And $7 million is included for the Department of Natural Resources to acquire high-priority parcels and improve existing state lands through actions such as replanting and seeding trees after timber harvest. And $85 million of the plan is set aside for other investments in other areas. $40 million is set aside for local projects, and $20 million is included for MnDOT to maintain, expand, construct MnDOT-owned buildings, such as adding mechanical space at the St. Cloud headquarters, which was built in 1969 and needs more space for snow removal and other equipment. $12 million is included for DNR to modernize existing and invest in new facilities, such as expanding the Hibbing Drill Corps Library to meet their statutory requirement to store mineral exploration samples. And $5 million is included for the Department of Human Services for grants to political subdivisions, nonprofits, and tribal governments to construct and renovate early childhood facilities. Overall, the governor's plan is estimated to leverage $640 million in other additional funds, such as federal and local funds. Examples include $39 million in PFA state match is estimated to unlock $196 million in federal funds. $40 million in a MnDOT high priority bridge program is estimated to unlock $168 million in federal funds. The $37 million for the Met Council Bus Rapid Transit is estimated to unlock $75 million in federal funds. And the $50 million in housing infrastructure bonds is estimated to unlock another $50 million in local and federal and private investment. Next week, MMB's Enterprise Director for Federal Funds Implementation will be presenting to this committee about federal infrastructure funding opportunities as well. Finally, I'd like to address the financing plan for the capital budget. $830 million of this package is general obligation bonds, and $152 million is made up of other funds such as appropriation bonds, trunk highway cash, and general fund cash for a total of $982 million across all funds. This table shows the biennial financial impact of the governor's recommendations compared to the forecast. The debt service cost for bonds extends beyond the next biennium, but this table shows the biennial impact of the governor's recommendation to the general fund and to the Trunk Highway Fund. In the general fund, $830 million $1,000 of GO bonds is assumed in the forecast based on a 10-year historic average. There are some savings in the governor's recommendations compared to forecast because $11 million of the GO bonds are user-financed at Minnesota State. Additionally, the housing infrastructure appropriation bonds will have a general fund impact beginning in fiscal year 27. As I mentioned, $28 million is included from general fund cash. Overall, the general fund impact is $28 million in this biennium, and there's $371,000 in savings next biennium compared to forecast. This is within the $82 million balance forecasted at the end of FY27. The trunk highway fund impact is $74 million for this biennium, and zero for the next biennium. This is within the $84 million balance in the trunk highway fund. And finally, just want to make note that the materials for the governor's recommendations are posted on MMB's website. You can see that here, including a summary listing of state and local projects included in the governor's infrastructure plan.
Thank you, Commissioner Campbell. And members, before we move on to questions for the commissioner, I do want to note that if you have specific questions regarding a specific line item or agencies, we will be having the agencies come in future hearings, and so they could speak a little bit more to that. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Chair Lee. And, it's good to be here again in this role with all of you. I think before I get into some comments, just a brief history lesson for those that maybe haven't been around here as many bonding cycles as I've been. And that is that the last two, three bills were exceptional in terms of how we operate. I mean, the money, the cash, that's not the way it's normally been. I think historically, and this is now my, not that long. This will be my 22nd year here, and I've been on this committee for 20 of them. And, you know, $600 million might have been a good bonding bill for most of that time. When I chaired the committee, we did one over $800 million, and that was a big bonding bill. And just so folks understand that then, if you wanted cash, it was you went to the, in my case, you go to Senator Rosen and you beg for a little cash from the Senate so that we can put something together. And $25, $30 million might have been a big amount of cash in those days. But, you know, things changed recently, and we had a lot of cash and a lot of GO, and it got spent. And now we're kind of getting back to the way things used to be, the way normal is. This is an $830 million GO bill, and that's in the old days a big bill. Now it's maybe in the average category, but it's still getting back more to the way things used to be. Saying that, looking at and Commissioner Campbell, hearing your presentation, I think that the governor has provided us with a good proposal to start from. I do like the fact that it's heavy on asset preservation, water, transportation. Those are, I think, the important things that we should be concentrating on. We're going to need to prioritize. We're going to need to scale back some of these things because I think that at $40 million, it's going to be tough to put together a local project bill. And so, with that, I look forward to working with the with you and with the governor's office and, of course, with the majority here in putting together a bill that reflects a lot of these proposals with some alterations.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Campbell. Thank you for the presentation. Looking ahead requires looking back a little bit, and so with the Representative Erdahl mentioned, we had very big bills. And we also, through many committees, had some significant investments in infrastructure through the committees. And I think it'd be helpful when we get into the specifics just to see how the administration has digested some of the significant infrastructure projects if you're asking for more in those same areas. You know, that if, and I see some things where there's duplication where we invested last year and you're asking for more. And I think the question for us is, how much have you spent or how much has been invested for those infrastructure projects that we funded last year? And then related to that, and you referenced that next week we'll hear from kind of the federal investment, we're aware of, you know, significant dollars that will be available, not only to leverage, but direct cash. And how many of these proposals that are for asset preservation or facilities, infrastructure, wastewater, could be funded directly from federal money that's coming into the state? You know, what is the actual cash opportunity from the federal dollars, and who makes those decisions? Is that solely administration, or is that something where the legislature can provide some, just call them ideas, in terms of that money?
Sounds like that's more of a comment. Chair Hansen?
Good question.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, we hear you on that question and happy to provide some of that information. And I'll go ahead and give Micah Intermill, who is the federal funds director, who will be here with you next week, the question that you've posed so that we can answer that proactively for you.
Representative Pawlowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to just make a few comments on the University of Minnesota and Minnesota State. Mr. Chair, I've requested that both of those entities, when they do their presentations to the higher ed committee, that particularly with asset preservation, it be broken down by university and college, and it be broken down by priority, so that when we take a look at what $102 million would do, I want to see it at the campus level, starting with the priority of those projects. And I also want to take a look at the how that would tie into programs. As you know, we have had record declining enrollment, and we're fighting our way out of it. I want to make sure if we're making these investments that we're making it in a way that we can address the declining enrollment. I'm amazed at what the governor's done in the parity. Coming within a dollar is very impressive. I also think it's a good start. But if you take a look at Minn State, the request was $200 million. They have 81.7, and then they jumped down to St. Paul College. Mr. Chair, I think we need an explanation all the way through these presentations of why those changes were made. But I'm going to go back and repeat that, particularly with asset preservation, the presentation will be in my committee, and that data will be for you, Mr. Chair, to make the presentation at the university and college level. And then I want to also see all of the priorities for asset preservation by college and university, Mr. Because it's critical now that we preserve what we have in order to sustain and hopefully improve declining enrollment.
Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. And I think the same request will be for the two systems, too, when they do come before our committee. Hopefully that's after the conversation that you have in your committee. Next, we have Representative Wolgamott.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And thank you so much, Madam Commissioner, for all the work that you and the governor and the lieutenant governor did during the legislative interim of getting out throughout the state, of coming and looking at projects in our districts. One of my favorite memories from the interim was when you came to the Herbrooks National Hockey Center and took a look at that refrigeration system project. And to that point, I want to express my support and gratitude for your commitment to funding HEPR. As Chair Pawlowski said, the $103 million for the University of Minnesota, the $103 million for Minnesota State, those are huge investments that are absolutely needed in our higher education institutions throughout the state. One thing, Mr. Chair, that I would appreciate asking the commissioner is just some clarification and further explanation. Madam Commissioner, in your presentation, you noted that there were $2.9 billion in requests for local projects. And I see on the spreadsheet here on page 19, line 681, that of those $2.9 billion in requests, that there are $40 million for local projects. Can you explain how you got to that $40 million number, considering there were $2.9 billion in requests, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Campbell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wolgamont, I'm happy to answer that question. As you can see, we have decided in this bill to focus very heavily on asset preservation. And the reason that we did that is because we know that we have a responsibility to maintain our state assets and to protect the investments that taxpayers have made in facilities across the state. We also know that state agencies and the governor are some of the strongest advocates for that, and so coming in with a high number is a reflection of understanding that throughout this process that number is going to go down a little bit. And so what I would say is that having that as a starting point for half of the bill and then understanding some of the other very significant priorities in places like water infrastructure, public safety and transportation, we wanted to make sure that there was a recognition of local projects ultimately being an important part of the bill, but we're trying to do that within a more constrained resource environment. The thing that I might point to is that 25% of the bill goes to agencies, but to grant programs that ultimately pass through to local governments and other entities. And so while they are not delineated by certain communities that, you know, there are funds in this bill that will go to local government projects through the Public Facilities Authority program, through deed programs, and many others.
Mr. Chair, follow up, if you please. Well, thank you for that answer, Madam Commissioner. I'm glad to hear that this is a starting point, because as members of this committee, as representatives of our district, our communities are counting on us to be strong advocates in delivering for local projects. I know in my district alone, I put forward a $100 million request for downtown St. Cloud revitalization, phase one of which is $20 million. I'm also working with the University of Minnesota and CentraCare for a medical school that's $13 million. That $40 million could go get used up in my district alone pretty quick. So, again, I appreciate the needs throughout the state and with the agencies. I do hope that we can work as a committee and with you and the governor and lieutenant governor to find that balance where we are meeting the needs of asset preservation throughout the state while also meeting the needs that we have as representatives of communities for those local projects. So thank you very much, Madam Commissioner, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's good to be back. Spent a lot of time with everyone this summer. It was fun last summer. Got to learn the state, right? being new to this process, and Commissioner, maybe more of a statement and a recognition. One of the things that caught my eye were, you know, cheaper to maintain than fix, state agency deferred, HEPA, all these things about putting money. Is it safe to say, and this is kind of what I'm looking at, that these backlogs and that are caused by both political parties, that there's not one particular than the other, that it is what it is, and how we tackle it forward? I know at the University of Minnesota, they had $500 million. I think that was the ask that night. You know, and I see they have $100 million. But that's for the whole system. So does the U get more down here? Does Crookston get more? You know, and to me, I'm just curious because I'd like to fund it all. You know, but there were some things that the governor did and did not do. What is your take on that? Do you think a lot of these deferred things are political, or is it just the nature?
Representative Scraba, before I turn it over to the commissioner, Chair. No worries. The two systems will be coming before us on Monday, and
right.
So you could ask them specifically around their distribution formula.
Yep.
Commissioner Campbell.
Chair Lee, Representative. I think that, as has been noted, the bonding bills are balancing acts, and regardless of who's putting those bills together, you're trying to figure out how to make it work, how to get a bill across the finish line. And oftentimes, my observation is that asset preservation takes a bit of a hit in that process. And so hopefully that's a simple enough answer to your question. But I think that if you look back at how much governors have recommended in asset preservation and how much is ultimately funded, almost always it is at a lower level in recognition of the other things that need to get added to the bill.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. That's it. Thanks.
Members, any additional questions before we turn it over to the Assistant Commissioner for the next segment? Seeing none, thank you so very much, Commissioner Campbell.
Thank you very much.
So next on the agenda, we have Assistant Commissioner Hasmer coming to present on the debt capacity report. Welcome, Assistant Commissioner. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon to members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jennifer Hasmer, Assistant Commissioner for Debt Management at Minnesota Management and Budget. So I'm happy to be here today to talk about the state's capital investment guidelines, debt capacity, and the cancellation report. But before diving into those topics, if we turn to the first slide, I wanted to start by offering a look at the municipal bond market over the last 5 years. What you can see on this chart is that after the historic lows in 2020 and 2021, interest rates have been rising since 2022, and over the last 2 years have been further marked by periods of volatility. When MMB sold bonds last summer in 2023, we received interest rates of 3.4%, and the November forecast predicted that bond interest rates would continue to rise and stay at these higher levels for the years to come. Although the state is always subject to current market conditions when we go to sell bonds, the state's strong credit rating of AAA's, which is the highest possible credit rating, helps mitigate against these higher interest rates and keep the state's borrowing costs low. So first I'll start with the state's capital investment guidelines. And starting with the purpose and why we have guidelines, I'll first note that the state has had some form of capital investment guidelines going back to 1979. The purpose behind these guidelines is to help guide decision making around future capital budget packages, set policy goals through designated limits and targets, and show a commitment to long-term financial planning. The state's guidelines were last updated in 2009, and I'll walk through them in order in the coming slides. But first, a quick overview explaining why we have the current guidelines that we have. Our current guidelines allow comparability across and against other states. They are consistent with how the rating agencies view the state's obligations. They're inclusive of all tax-supported debt, and they reflect the state's strong financial management practices. As Commissioner Campbell mentioned in her presentation, the rating agencies view adherence to these guidelines as a positive factor in the state's overall credit rating, which was affirmed, as I mentioned, as AAA just last summer again by all three rating agencies. Turning to the next slide, this is just an overview of the types of debt that get measured in our capital investment guidelines. You can see this includes the state's general obligation debt, which is both GO bonds supported by the general fund and by the trunk highway fund, state appropriation bonds, other agency-issued debt that is backed by a standing appropriation from the state, like MHFA's housing infrastructure bonds, lease purchase financings for real estate and equipment, and moral obligation debt. The one type of debt that is not captured in our guidelines are self-supporting debt. Often you would hear these to be issued as revenue bonds. Those are supported and by a dedicated stream of revenues pledged to that specific form of debt. So next, I will walk through each of the guidelines in turn, starting with guideline number one, which compares the total amount of state debt that the state has sold and currently owes to bondholders against the state's personal income. Under this guideline, total outstanding tax-supported principal should be 3.25% or less of state personal income. In November, in our November debt capacity forecast, guideline number one measured at 1.86% of personal income. The purpose behind this guideline is to approximate the state's capacity to repay debt based on available resource base. The types of debt that factor into our guideline one analysis include our general obligation bonds, including general fund supported and trunk highway bonds, state appropriation bonds, including certificates of participation, which are just another form of appropriation bond, and other state-supported debt like the housing infrastructure bonds that I mentioned. If we turn to the next slide, guideline number 2 compares the total amount of authorized debt compared to the state's personal income. So this guideline measures all types of debt captured under guideline number 1, whether it has been sold or if it is still yet to be sold but has just been authorized by the legislature. And also adds in state moral obligations and equipment capital leases like the state's master lease program. The limit under this guideline is that total authorized debt should be 6% or less of state personal income. And in November, this measurement was just 3.66% of personal income. Turning to the next slide, finally, guideline number 3 evaluates how quickly the state is scheduled to repay its general obligation bonds, with no less than 40% being paid off within 5 years and no less than 70% being paid off within 10 years. The purpose behind this guideline is to realize the cost of bonding bills quickly, thus preserving capacity for new debt to be authorized in the future. This provides ongoing financial flexibility to future legislatures, and as a practice, is looked at, viewed favorably by the rating agencies. Turning to the next slide, this is just a historic view of how the state has measured under guidelines 1 and 2 over the last 10 years. The state has managed compliance with guideline 1 and guideline 2 over this time period, remaining below the designated thresholds. From here, I will transition to a conversation on debt capacity. And before you can turn to the next slide, and to set up this conversation, I first wanted to provide an update on the state's overall level of indebtedness. MMB publishes this information as part of a debt capacity forecast that accompanies the larger budget and economic forecast each February and November. And you should have received a copy of our November debt capacity forecast as part of your materials. This report covers a number of topics, including a statement on the state's current debt levels, our debt service costs, our capital investment guideline measurements, as well as our borrowing capacity. The table on this slide is a statement of our indebtedness and shows that there is currently $7.8 billion in outstanding state debt. The middle column shows the breakdown of that $7.8 billion across the different types of bonds, including general obligation bonds, trunk highway bonds, and state appropriation debt. The far right column reflects debt that has been authorized by the legislature but remains unissued. And you can see the total there is $3.8 billion, which represents an increase as a result of last year's 2023 bonding bills. As one quick note, for a reminder, the state does not issue all of the authorized debt at once following passage of a bonding bill. Instead, bond sales are based on an estimated cash flow needs from all of the projects that have received their funding, and typically the bonds are issued and sold over a period of 5 years or more. So while turning to the next slide, while our debt guidelines measure our debt obligations at a specific point in time, such as when new debt is first authorized, it first impacts the calculation for guideline number 2, and then once the debt is sold, it also impacts the calculation for guideline number 1. When we pivot from talking about the guidelines to debt capacity, that conversation becomes about how big a bonding bill could be. As a reminder, the forecast carries assumptions about the size of future bonding bills, which the assumptions are based on a 10-year historic rolling average of previous bonding bills. With the most recent November forecast, these figures were updated as shown on the slide, $830 million in 2024, $165 million in future odd-numbered years, and $1.01 billion in future even years starting in 2026. If we turn to the next slide, this is a table that is published in our debt capacity forecast that attempts to estimate the maximum amount of debt that could be authorized only looking at guidelines 1 and 2. As a reminder, guidelines 1 and 2 are measuring state debt against personal income. And the goal of this table was to reflect the maximum amount of debt that could be authorized up until the time that the limit in one of these two guidelines is reached. The table shows that the 3.25% limit in guideline number 1 would be first reached in fiscal year 2030. But please note that this table does not serve as a recommendation about the prudent amount of debt that the state should carry. While the state continues to see strong personal income growth, this does not automatically correlate to having available resources in the budget to support this level of borrowing. To that end, the bottom row of the table reflects the additional resources that would be needed above the forecast to support these maximum debt levels. Turning to the next slide, MMB included new information in the November debt capacity forecast to show maximum debt projections under guideline number 3 for the first time. This was based on a number of questions and conversations that have come up in regard to this guideline in recent years. And as just a quick reminder, the purpose of guideline number 3 is to help realize the cost of today's bonding bills quickly in order to preserve additional borrowing capacity for the future. It only measures general obligation debt, including general fund supported and trunk highway fund supported. As a means of complying with this guideline, MMB structures our general obligation debt with level principal. And what that means is that once the interest cost is factored in, the state pays higher debt service in the first years of a new bond issue compared to the final years. Similar to a home mortgage that you might be familiar with, interest is always higher at the beginning. In the second column of this table, it shows the maximum amounts of bonding authorizations that could be enacted this year and in the years to come, and allow the state to remain in compliance with guideline number 3. This analysis is based on current projections for future bond sale sizes. And because our next bond sale is not planned until later this summer, which will be the next fiscal year, the next point in time that these percentages will change will be in fiscal year 2025. We are anticipating a larger bond sale this coming year to meet ongoing project cash flow needs. And this larger anticipated sale is the driving factor as to why the percentages drop from the first row to the second row on this table, and why the maximum amount of new debt for 2024 is limited to $830 million. So turning to the last slide on this part of the presentation, before I wind down our conversation on debt capacity, I just thought I'd share this final picture to support the state's moderate debt burden, which the rating agencies continue to note when we present to them every summer. This chart shows that Minnesota is right in the middle of the pack of all 50 states when it comes to comparing debt to personal income. And Mr. Chair, that is my presentation on debt capacity. I can cover cancellation report quickly or pause here for any questions.
Let's pause for any questions first before we move on. Members, any questions around this? Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioner. Comments and then a question. I find it interesting that the interest rate dropped pretty precipitously on 1/1/24 on page 3. Can you buy bonds now before it goes up? Just, I know you have to wait till 25. The numbers that you gave us, the guideline 1 and guideline 2, when we have a percentage left, like a 1.39% left on guideline 1 and 3.4%, well, let's take it back, 2.34% on guideline number 2, and you kind of went into why we're not spending that money, and I appreciate that. But on guideline number 3, where it says at least 40% of the state GO bonds are to mature within 5 years, and we have 43, which is within reason. And then it says, and 70% within 10 years. Is that at least again, so the 75% is okay? Is that okay? Okay. And on the statement of indebtedness on page 12, we have a total of $7.8449 billion of principal outstanding and authorized. Is the $730 million state office building included in that?
This is the commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Scraba, yes, the state office building, the certificates of participation that were issued are included and the line for the annual appropriation debt, the total of $1.6 billion. That is outstanding.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is it safe for me to assume then, on what I've read and seen here, in 2026, kind of in your debt capacity projections, we would have $1.1 billion in 2026 and $165 in 2025?
This is the commissioner.
Sorry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scraba, yes, if you're looking at the chart on page or slide 15, which are the maximum debt authorized, maximum debt allowed under guideline number 3, that's the correct way to read that table. That $165 million could be authorized in 2025, and $1.36 billion could be authorized in 2026.
Representative Scraba.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, so when I looked at guideline one and three, my first blush was, well, we still can spend more because we have 1.39 left. Is that safe to say, or are you being conservative and not wanting to spend it? Or is it really there and available?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scraba, under guideline, if you're just looking at guideline number one and number two, the table on slide 14 does show that there would be capacity to authorize an additional $3.3 billion this year. However, it runs into the limitations imposed by guideline number 3. And then it would also have an additional cost above the forecasted amount, so it would take more resources out of the general fund to be able to support a bonding package this year above $830 million.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Thank you.
Members, any additional questions? Seeing none, Assistant Commissioner, you can proceed to the next piece of the agenda.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So this is just a quick overview of the cancellation process that applies to capital projects funded by the legislature. MMB issues a cancellation report on January 1st of each year pursuant to 16A.642, and you should have a copy of this year's report in your packets. Under this statute, capital projects have 4 years from the time that their funds are passed by the legislature to enter into contracts to move their projects forward. This doesn't require that the funds be spent within 4 years, just that the projects are moving towards completion and under contract to do so. MMB's cancellation report lists all of the bond and cash-funded capital projects enacted more than 4 years previously that have unspent and unencumbered balances. In the 2024 report, MMB listed $2.8 million in general obligation bond projects and $461,000 in cash capital projects from the 2019 bonding bill and earlier that are subject to cancellation this year. And these balances will cancel on July 1st this year unless they are reauthorized and given an extension by the legislature. Any canceled balances will go towards repaying state debt or we'll go back to the general fund in the case of cash capital projects. And I'm happy to take any questions on the cancellation report.
Members, any questions on this? All right, seeing none, thank you, Assistant Commissioner, for being here. So next on the agenda, we have Assistant Commissioner Wozlowski from the Department of Administration. Welcome to the committee. Assistant Commissioner, please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Wayne Wozlowski, Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Administration. We appreciate the opportunity to present the 2023 Asset Preservation Report. And to highlight the critical need, that ongoing need that we have for consistent funding for taking care of our state facilities and addressing our deferred maintenance that we have. And with me today is Greg Uig. He's the Senior Director for Real Estate and Construction Services, and he will walk through the presentation.
Thank you, Wayne. Again, for the record, Greg Ewig, Senior Director of Real Estate and Construction Services in the Department of Administration. First, a little context. The Commissioner of MMB had given you a little bit of an overview here. But just to recap, the state of Minnesota owns roughly 4,900 buildings spread out over 19 state agencies. This adds up to about 34 million square feet under the control of the Department of Administration and the cooperating agencies. These buildings have a replacement value of about $11 billion. And the average age, as noted before, roughly around 42 years old, with 44% of those buildings over the age of 40. The Department of Administration has calculated that the deferred maintenance on these buildings is estimated to be around $2.2 billion. This slide may look familiar because it is certainly something that's important to remember, that it is cheaper to maintain than fix. The governor had recommended that a significant portion of his bonding bill go to fund state agency asset preservation projects. Asset preservation has become increasingly important for state agency operations. Asset preservation provides safety, improved safety, pardon me, and better government while protecting state investment in the following ways. First, funding asset preservation and maintaining property stewardship ensures that the staff, public, and custodial individuals are kept safe and that functional needs are optimally met. Next, timely planned preventative maintenance reduces our total cost of ownership, eventually freeing up resources for other core program functions. And the cost to maintain a building is cheaper than the cost to repair it. As noted here, the green line on the graph highlights the cost per square foot to repair our state-owned buildings, depending on the condition of the building condition status. And the blue bars reflect the percentage of state-owned buildings within each building status category. Addressing some of the backlog and remaining current on repairs is efficient budgeting because it costs more to fix breakdowns or runs to failure versus our ongoing planned upkeep. And lastly, funding asset preservation also saves money and reduces greenhouse gases. Modern, properly operating buildings use less energy and water, making agency buildings more operationally efficient while reducing energy costs. As mentioned, asset preservation is a statewide issue. In this map here, asset preservation needs for 2023 are spread, at least the spending for 2023 was spread in about 20 counties in Minnesota. Turning our attention to the funds that we've received recently, chart on the left is the 2020 asset preservation funds, and 2023 is on the right. I'd be remiss if we didn't say, you know, on behalf of all the agencies, thank you for your asset preservation funding appropriated during the last legislative session. To reorient members, the Department of Administration receives the funding and coordinates construction management with the state agencies that operate these state-owned facilities. And to provide some additional context, at the top level, the legislature appropriated roughly $44 billion in 2020 and almost $70 million in 2023. You can see the breakdown by the specific state agencies there. Additionally, as a side note, not shown on the chart, but the Department of Administration did receive roughly $9.4 million from the general fund in the state government finance bill for asset preservation of the Capitol complex and related infrastructure. Shown here is really a summary of the total spent by appropriation year. The 2020 appropriation was roughly amounted to $11.4 million, and 2023 we've spent roughly $18.8 million from those appropriations. And we are expecting to have basically encumbered all the 2020 asset preservation funds by the end of this calendar year and fairly close to expending all that had been appropriated. As a reminder, the eligible asset preservation projects are statutorily defined, but the list on this slide is representative of the types of projects our state agencies have completed with asset preservation funding. There are core building systems that you think about, heating, ventilation, windows and roofs and the like, but also includes hazardous materials abatement, such as asbestos and lead paint. Spend a few moments just highlighting some of the specific agency spending for asset preservation. To start with, the Department of Corrections spent approximately $22 million at 11 locations throughout the state with those combined 2020 and 2023 appropriations. The agency updated plumbing, HVAC, and improved their security measures, such as security fencing and their related systems. Roofs and water upgrades were also prioritized this year. Next, the Department of Human Services spent approximately $3.7 million at 5 locations throughout the state. The spending including replacement of water mains and sewers in addition to the roofs, windows, and tuck pointing. Sewers and water on campus are typically not city-owned and are our responsibility to fix. State academies spent about $550,000 at their campuses to repair concrete and make preparations for a security corridor that's being installed. And then the Veterans Affairs, Department of Veterans Affairs spent approximately $14.8 million at 7 locations with work on HVAC, exterior repairs, and replacing a sanitary sewer line on campus. And looking ahead, the projected 2024 agency asset preservation requests are shown here and also in the package today. And with that, again, thank you for your support and kind attention, and we stand ready for any questions you may have.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a point of concern with some members of this committee, and see, Representative Pawlowski isn't here, but roof replacement. I mean, a lot of places we go to need repairs of their roofs. Do you have any recommendations on this? I mean, our point of contention has been the feeling that we should have more steep roofs and not flat roofs. Do you have any recommendations on that when buildings are being built or repaired?
This is the commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, so for what we do is go to the industry to look to the design professionals to give us guidance. So the experts on our roofing projects, we're typically hiring a specialty consultant that's a specialty field. And so you have a design firm that is focused on giving us the longest lasting roof that we can get with the funding that we have available. So it's a little bit different. We also, than you might see in maybe some non-public projects where we are actually having that design professional also there doing construction observation as those reference systems are being installed to make sure that any deficiencies are being corrected while the work is being done. But we really do rely on the design professionals to give us that guidance.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, from our experience, we see a lot of roofs. Yeah. And the ones that are problematic are almost always flat. Just wondering how much education it takes for these people to figure out that flat roofs leak more than pitched roofs do.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just looking at your, you know, the crisis buildings. Could you put a face to that? Like, what are a couple of the buildings that are in crisis mode? And then I'm surprised you're only asking for, are you asking for $5 million? And so I'm a little confused when it looks like just on the crisis line there, it's at $159 million.
Assist the commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly, so that process that happens, so every year agencies do what's called a facility condition assessment for each of the state-owned facilities. And this is part of an enterprise real property program where that process is standardized so that all state agencies are evaluating using the same standards to evaluate their buildings. And oftentimes sometimes they'll do that in-house. It's a train the trainer. Well, they'll train their facilities staff members on how to do facility condition assessments. Other times, maybe every few years, they'll bring in an outside consultant to assist with that process. And that really is the process that goes through to identify what gets into a poor category. Typically, when you get to that point, it's mechanical systems are failing. It's to Representative Erdahl's point. It's roofing systems. It's a more comprehensive. The building's just gotten to an age where you're having more wholesale issues with keeping water out, keeping the facilities conditioned.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just quick, can you name what's the worst of the worst? Because we toured a lot of places in the state. I just maybe don't want to say, but
But
is there one,
Mr. Chair, Representative Levesque, I can give one next door. We just demolished the Ford building, and I know that was a matter of a lot of conversation over a lot of number of years. But you maybe were on that tour a few years back and saw what condition the building was in. But that would be an example of a building that just got to the point where no longer that investment that it would take to bring that building up to current standards versus using your funds in a different way made more sense.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Members, any additional questions? So, Assistant Commissioner, I do have a question for you. So going to page 5 and 6 of the presentation, just using the numbers that was shared with us, in 2023, we provided $73 million in asset preservation, and then the next page says that of the total appropriation that was spent for 2023 was roughly $19 million. And so where's that $54 million? I think going back to Chair Hansen's questions earlier, how do we know that the funding that we're going to appropriate are going to be expended so that by the time you're coming back to us, you're not sitting on, I think, my rough math, $54
million? Mr. Chair, members, that is absolutely a fair question. The one thing I would first note is that level consistent funding is much easier to manage than the spikes in funding. And where that really gets, obviously you have a procurement process, you have to go through the design process, bidding process, and then get the contractors lined up. But it's also, a lot of our facilities we work in have security related needs. So it's correctional facilities, it's the human services facilities. So there's coordination that has to happen from a security standpoint to do the work. I can certainly say that every penny that you've allocated to date is already assigned to a project. And each of the state agencies already know, here's the project that they're going to use that money for, and it's a matter of getting that project through the pipeline. I'd also add, Greg had indicated, for the 2020 appropriations, we fully expect all those funds to be encumbered this year. So we are working through that, but it does take us time to work through all the stages of procurement and then coordinating with the facilities around security.
All right, thank you, Assistant Commissioner. I think just a comment, for all the agencies that will be coming forth, I think Representative Erdahl mentioned it before, and Representative Wogema around the different, or at least in the governor's proposal around, the share for local projects. I think that will be key for us when we have conversation with all the different agencies before us around timing and how could you expend the fund right away or whatnot so that we could have a balance that could actually get a bill through, the House and also through the Senate. And so just wanted to put it out there for all the agencies, when we have this conversation, how could we make sure that whatever funding number that we put in will actually fit and still address some of the needs of the local communities that we are seeing in front of us. Seeing no other business before us, thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Thank you, Director.
Thank you.
So, members, before we adjourn for today, I do want to note that throughout the interim, we have received a lot of modification requests for previous appropriations, whether that's 2023 or before. And so I encourage you all to connect with your local communities that if there are any modification requests for us to consider, let us know. We have a bill that has been introduced, and we'll be working with Representative Erdahl and the Senate to figure out what we need to do as we move forward. With that, I will turn it over to Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and appreciate the information. I mean, this is something that's done, you know, after every bonding bill. We have to go through and see if there are technical errors or fixes that can be made. My question is, when do you plan on bringing this up? I mean, not in conjunction with the bill we're working on, but separately, I would assume.
Representative Erdahl, you know, that's a conversation that I think, you know, the four of us as leads and chair of the committee of the four caucuses should, you know, continue to have. And I think that there are interests, you know, from myself and at least Senator Pappas on the Senate side to move early. And if there's interest, you know, with your caucus and the minority caucus in the Senate, I think that's something that we're open to having ongoing conversation. And that's why I think it's key for communities from across the state to provide that information as soon as possible so that whether we, you know, move early or later in session, we have all the information we need to help those projects move forward. Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think, you know, that, in my opinion, we should do it as a separate bill as soon as we can. These are projects that have already been approved. They're just minor technical changes that need to be made. And we should proceed. Now, we don't exactly have a caucus position on that, but I'm assuming that that would meet with their approval.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. I really appreciate the sentiment. I think that it is in interest of our members, at least here at the committee, to see, you know, what can we do to address some of those modification needs so that projects can move forward as soon as possible. Seeing no other questions or comments, member, really appreciate all of you being here. Our next meeting will be on Monday, February 19th, and on the agenda is an overview of the federal infrastructure funding in Minnesota State and the University of Minnesota. The meeting is adjourned.